If there's one skill that I would get great at, it's prospecting, because a big fat pipeline solves a lot of problems. But if you can prospect, you'll never go hungry. You don't want to hold on to somebody who's not good at their job or who isn't executing, because it's not that they're not good at, it's not that they suck in general. It's just they might suck at this position. And so you cutting them and letting them go find what they're going to be great at is actually doing them a service. I've been talking about the predictable revenue model being a joke for a while now, before AI even came out. When you realize you get more value out of that 5-minute conversation with that ChatGPT than you will with some dipshit sales rep who's going to come in and ask you a bunch of bant questions and drone through PowerPoint presentations, you realize how in trouble sales is. We're not going to get replaced by AI. At least yet. Sales, you're going to get replaced by somebody who figures out how to use AI. I do think that we are moving back to full cycle sales. I think SDRs and BDRs are going to roll up under marketing, and they're going to be using all those tools, but they're going to be more salaried positions. And then they're going to be feeding intent, real intent, back to full cycle sales. All sales reps have to become mini marketers. That's why brand matters. That's why what you do on social matters. That's why that retweet, that share, that comment, because it might be a conscious or a subconscious thing, but you're placing those impressions.
John Burroughs is the CEO of JB Sales, and honestly, he's one of my idols. So it's with great pride and honor that I can say this is his second time on the show. In the first part of the discussion, we get into some business lessons that John has taken from 2023 and applied to his company here in 2024 to remain profitable and fulfilled as an individual. From there, we get into debunking the predictable revenue model, highlighting the transformative power of AI in sales, and what it takes to have a kick-ass sales kickoff. Toward the end of the conversation, I hit John with some rapid-fire questions on topics like remote work, his preferred CRM, the future of sales development, and we even talk a little hip-hop. In a serendipitous twist, the episode wraps with a story about the number 55, and this just so happens to be our 55th episode. John, thanks for being here. You were on the show last season. You were the second episode in, so I was really green at this whole thing getting started. And true to form, I'll probably still bounce around a little bit. But tell me, first of all, how was 2023, I'm sorry, for the business? How did it wrap up? And what kind of changes are you making going into 2024?
Man, yeah, 2023 was, if 2021 was my hardest personal year, because my dad passed away and all that stuff, and I was kind of on this weird journey there.
Sorry.
2023 was by far hardest business year I've ever had. Hardest year in business I've ever had by far. It was a wake up call for me. You know, I realized, because I had built a business up until 2022, and things were going great, right? You know, we had 20 employees, we probably $5.5 million in revenue. And then towards the end of 2022, I started kind of seeing the tea leaves, like, ooh, all right, you know, like pipeline's not where it needs to be. Like, all right, like, but we're all right. So I kind of punted on Q4 of 2022 and said, all right, let's kind of lean in on 2023. Like, let's make sure we start off the year strong. And then Q1 of 2023 hit, and with 95% of my clients is SaaS, got kicked right in the teeth. And, you know, all my clients had money in SVB. Like, so literally the SaaS industry came to a screeching halt. And I had, you know, two sides of the business. I had the sell better side of the house that was cranking with sponsorships with all the SaaS companies. And then I had my trainers who were cranking with all the training with SaaS companies. And that all literally stopped on a dime. I mean, it was worse than COVID. When COVID hit, it was a panic. But first of all, my burn was a lot less. But also it was a blip. And then SaaS exploded. You know what I mean? Like everything came to, like literally came to a screeching halt for 2 months. And for me, it was a panic, because 95% of my business back then was on site, traveling all over the world, right? Thankfully, we had been structured to deliver remote training when COVID hit, but nobody ever wanted it. Everybody kind of assumed that the on-site stuff was the way to go. And so with the forcing function of going remote, we were set up to do it. And we had just released our on-demand catalog and everything like that. So it was like, bing. And we did prospecting, by the way. So when everybody's pipeline emptied out, right? Not
yeah,
only
fill the funnel right there on deck, ready to go.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like not only did the program work, but we came out with this shiny new little Netflix for sales thing before everybody else was doing it. And it was hot, like boom, right? So COVID was actually a blessing for me. When this shit happened at the beginning of 2023, it was different. And it stopped, and it stopped for a lot longer. And people got scared, right? So they were scared to make big investments. They were making small investments maybe here or there, but the big ones were not happening. And with my burn the way it was, and with all the employees and that ever so, it all fell apart. So I had to come to the conclusion that all right, I got to work on this. So I cut the business in half, gave Sell Better to my business partner, and then told my trainers, like, I can't keep paying your salaries, but you could be 1099 if you want, right? And it ended up just being, and then I remember, because I wanted to try to figure out, I mean, you know me, I always sell, right? But I haven't like hardcore sold in a long time, like really
I
hit the
noticed you've
phone.
picked it up lately on the content front, so
Oh,
I
hell yeah.
imagine on the outbound you're probably really kicking ass too.
Yeah. So it's like, so when I saw February as bad as it was, I was like, shit, okay. So I put my like hardcore sales hat back on and I ended up generating, I think I got like 40. I did a post on this. I did 49 meetings in February and 70 meetings in Q1. And it was really just a force, like, and I tell people this all the time, like prospecting, if there's one skill that I would get great at, it's prospecting, because a big fat pipeline solves a lot of problems. But if you can prospect, you'll never go hungry, right? And so I was able to, because of that skill that I had developed over the years and never stopped doing it, I was able to put it back on. And obviously, because of my brand and the network and the relationships I had. So
Do
all
what
that
you
came to
teach.
fruition. And so that was key to me because, people talk about brand and relationships and networking and all that stuff. And they understand, they like, well, when can you see tangible things from those type of things? Well, I saw some real tangible shit in Q1 because of my brand, because of the relationships I had developed, and because of my abilities to sell. So I was able to get through it. But I did a lot of reflecting. I realized I built a business because I wanted to, not because I'm sorry, I built a business because I could, not because I wanted to. And I was caught up with everybody else. Like, things were flying high, things were good. It's like, so I lost track of the details. I got lazy.
Got comfortable.
And so I realized, I think I'm a lot of self-reflection, right? I think I'm a decent leader. I'm an all right coach. I'm a terrible manager. Like,
Well, that's
just
funny you say that. I actually had this teed up because in our last interview, it was you said my biggest weakness, quote unquote, is accountability.
100%.
So that's so you had to cut the business in half and you had to make those tough decisions, but there's still people around that you're probably having to tighten the screws with and making sure that, we're getting the most out of the ones that we had on staff still. Or talk to me about how
It's
you
just me
improved
and
your
Megan.
accountability.
It's
It's
just
just
me and
you.
Megan. Yeah, it's just me and Megan, right? So I was back to me early days of grinding again, but now I'm taking a much different approach. So I got two pieces where I'm not building a business anymore with people. So I'm going to do what everybody else is doing, which is outsource and leverage partnerships and leverage relationships and not have full time. I have no interest in building a business again with people. I'm sorry. Like, I tried. It's not my thing. So because I want to hold people accountable, but I don't want to fire people, because that's the other thing, is I'm a sucker, right? So it's like, if you're a good person, and you're not just a straight up douche, I let you last too long, unfortunately. And I know that's not good for
Comedy.
either. It's not good for either people, right? You don't want to hold on to somebody who's not good at their job or who isn't executing, because it's not that they're not good at, it's not that they suck in general. It's just they might suck at this position. And so you cutting them and letting them go find what they're going to be great at is actually doing them a service. But I still have a real heart, because one of my top values is family, right? And when I say family, not just my family, like, I get to know my employees' families and their situations and those type of things. So when it comes time to like discipline, if you will, I just like I it just sucks. I don't do it well. And so for me, having an outsourced person that does that thing is a lot easier, because I can fire an outsource. You know what I mean? Like, it's a month-to-month contract, and I can be like, and I can yell at them. I can be, you know what I mean? Like, I can be like, what the fuck? Why aren't we doing this? Like, get this shit done, figure it the fuck out. And I don't have to worry about hurting feelings. I don't have to worry about, because I'll just screw you. Like, I'm firing you. Like, and I don't have to worry about unemployment. I don't have to worry about legal, HR, any of that stuff, right? So right now I got an agent who's working with me to help rep and get my brand out, because there's a lot of influencer marketing coming to the B2B space. And then I got this outsourced group that's basically an outsourced COO that is going to handle all my admin stuff and like put me in a position where I can just do what I do, which is what I love, right? Standing up in front of crowds, delivering content, working with people. But I've realized, I'm 48 years old at this point. I've been in this game for a while. I still am very passionate about delivering and being in sales, right? But what I fucking hate is the prep, the follow-up, giving like feedback on people's, I mean, like,
You sound like a salesperson.
right? You know how many emails that I've reviewed for reps throughout the year? Like, thousands of emails where I'm like, Yeah, all right, tweak this up. Here's it. Have you gone and, go do some research? Here's some examples of this. And it's just like, I just don't want to do that anymore. Like, I really don't. And I think there's, quite frankly, there's a lot of AI tools that can do it. Like, I'm looking at creating an AI version of me that could do, because I have before and afters. Like, every time I do a training and I teach, a component, which is this email approach, right? Or messaging. What I'll do is I'll take the email from the rep and then I will literally give them feedback. I'll say, all right, good stuff. And I'll rewrite it for them. And then I'll put it side by side and then I'll give back to the client like 100 emails before and after. So I'm working on creating like an AI bot because now I can see exactly
You can
how I
train the learning
provide
model
feedback,
based on
right? And
that.
then it's like, yeah, now just submit your email to that AI bot, right? Because I don't need to be doing that right now. And so those are the type of things between AI and outsourcing and everything else. That's what I'm building now moving forward. And I'm pretty excited about it.
A lot of lessons came out of 2023. You actually, I'm gonna jump to your latest interview with Bob Marsh on the Make It Happen podcast. So for those that are tuning in, make sure you check out John's podcast as well. The latest episode was titled Embracing Simplicity to Stand Out. And you mentioned something in there that kind of ties into what you were just talking about. You were talking about how you're glad that the tech market fell apart in Q1 of 2022 and how 2010 to 2022 is the golden age of sales. We grew at all cost and, that's kind of fading away, created a lot of bad habits. But what got me was when you said that we've over-engineered the sales process with predictable revenue model. The model doesn't work anymore. The client doesn't get any value out of going through dipshit bank questions, demos, et cetera. Clients tolerate it. Now sales skills matter. So it sounds to me you had that internal view of your own business, your own skill set as well, coming out of 23, going into 24. But can you just a segue on this topic, can you double click on that statement?
Look, I've been talking about the predictable revenue model being a joke for a while now, before AI even came out, right? Back because it just it, if you think about, right? So for your listeners, like if they don't know what the predictable revenue model, it's the segmentation of roles, right? Like it went from everybody does, everything, prospecting all the way through to close to segmentation. You got the inbound, then you got the outbound rep who just sets meetings, and then the AE and then the CS, right? And if you really think about that model, it is great for us as businesses. Well, it used to be great for us as businesses to scale, right? Because theoretically, you get cheap talent, right? Right out of school, you beat the shit out of them, make them make cold calls, whatever it is, and then you grow them into your AEs and your senior reps and you go, right? And so it worked for a while when it was grow at all costs because it was an insanely good, predictable model. The problem is it was never customer centric, ever customer centric. I mean, who wants to be handed off to five times before they actually talk to somebody that knows what the fuck they're talking about, right? I mean, because if you think about the process, and I'm not saying all of them are like this, but I've seen enough where I'm gonna make generalizations based on my personal experience and what I'm seeing out there. SDRs send out templated bullshit cadence emails, maybe trip over an opportunity where somebody's like, holy shit, yeah, I kind of maybe need this, whatever it is. They ask some bare, some basic qualification questions, maybe BANT oriented. Then the client, if somehow they convince the client to take that next step, now the client's maybe interested, right? Oh, cool, Derek. Yeah, this sounds. Now the rep's like, well, I don't have enough info here. So I got to now set you up with my AE like a week later, right? Now the AE gets on the call, asks the same dumbass questions that the SDR did, right? And usually does no prep for that meeting. Drones through their dumbass BANT or medic questions, opens up their demo presentation, drones through a PowerPoint presentation, usually brings in the SE to do the majority of the work, then offers a massive discount. And then if that works, then they hand off to the customer success person who, again,
Same
that
problem. Well,
handoff
why
is a
did you buy?
joke, right? Why'd you buy? Who's this? What's this all about? It is a horrible customer experience. The analogy I make is you ever had like a problem with like your cell phone or cable or whatever it is, right? So what do you do? Like when you got cable, right? You unplug it, you plug it back in, but see if you can do the thing, like reboot, right? Then you call into the 1-800 number. Then you get somebody who's just gonna basically ask you a bunch of shit. Hey, did you turn it on and all that other stuff? And like 45 minutes later, they get to the point where they're like, sorry, I can't help. We're gonna have to elevate this to a technical. Oh, okay, cool. Then you get on the phone with the technical person who's probably the only person gonna actually help you. And they start with, so Derek, how can I help you today? And you're like, oh, dear Lord. Please tell me that that kid took fucking notes during those 45 minutes and you know what that is. Like, do I have to explain this entire situation with you again? And now you're mad at the only person that could actually probably bring value to you. And so it's been a broken model. Now, that's from a customer's perspective. It's a bad experience. But again, tolerance, because grow at all costs, who cares? Technology, ROI, doesn't matter. We're all doing this, right?
They're conditioned because everybody's doing it.
Right. Now look at it from a sales standpoint, though, from a business standpoint. Now it doesn't make any sense at all from our standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. Because first of all, the average SDR doesn't even stay at their company for more than 16 months. Okay. So that whole theory of getting cheap talent and then growing them to your AEs, that doesn't work anymore because they don't stay there. They can bounce around for the next hottest job, right? And because we've over-engineered the sales process now it's all falling apart. And then you throw AI on top of this, man. And when you realize, I tell reps this all the time, you don't think this is real? Like, you think this is a crypto and NFT fad type of thing? You're wrong. You're absolutely wrong, because this shit is exponentially learning on top of itself. It is already smarter than us. The suggestion I have for people who don't think this shit's real, go into ChatGPT, act as a customer, a potential customer for your product, okay? And just ask it some questions. So get in there and be like, hey, I'm a VP of sales in the SaaS industry. I have a team of 30 reps. Here's what we sell and here's what we sell. I'm looking for sales training. One of the trainings that I'm looking for is John Barrow, the JB sales training. I'm curious, tell me about the JB sales training. And based on what my priorities are, how does the JB sales training align with some of the things that I'm trying to do? And by the way, how does that compare to the other trainers out there? And what are three other options for training?
Oh, this is brilliant.
When you sit down and you do that for 5 minutes, okay? Just pretend like you are a customer, a potential customer for your service. When you realize you get more value out of that 5 minute conversation with that ChatGPT than you will with some dipshit sales rep who's going to come in and ask you a bunch of bant questions and drone through PowerPoint presentations, you realize how in trouble sales is. And I tell people this all the time. Like, we're not going to get replaced by AI, at least yet. Sales, you're going to get replaced by somebody who figures out how to use AI. Like, that's who you're going to get replaced by, period. And that's not even a debate, in my opinion.
So if you kept an SDR model as an example, mm-hmm. and you layered in the efficiency gains and you had SDRs and SDR managers and you had to use the AI efficiently, mm-hmm. couldn't you get by with less SDRs? So in essence, you are replacing people?
100%. That's the thing. It's like, that's why I think the shakeup in sales is still in 2024 is still going to be real. I think there's still going to be a shitload of layoffs in the SaaS industry. Because we just got rid of the overbloated in 23. Like, we just got rid of the overhiring because everybody, all the SaaS companies got greedy.
Right.
Now it's the efficiency game. And again, when you look at it and you could say, okay, I think there's an argument right now to just burn your entire sales stack and tech sales team to the ground and start from scratch.
Ooh.
Because there's a legitimate argument. Now, I don't think it's the right move, quite frankly, but if I was a new VP of sales or a new CRO coming into a situation, I would have to almost flip a coin on whether or not to just trash this entire fucking model with all the reps and then reset with AI enabled tech and AI enabled sales reps. And it might be a little bit clunky and you'll piss a lot of people off by doing that, but it's a better model, quite frankly. I think SDRs and BDRs.
Your stockholders might be happy though.
Yeah, oh, they'll be thrilled. And that's why you're seeing Google do it. That's why you're seeing Microsoft do it. That's why you're seeing the big boys do it, because they know. They know that AI is coming and can be way more efficient than these reps, right? So if you look at that, I mean, that's why people ask, like, John, how do I get started with ChatGPT? Like, that's a great question to ask ChatGPT. Legitimately, go in there and be like, I'm a 48-year-old man. I'm a CEO of a sales training organization. I have no idea what to do with ChatGPT. Tell me what to do.
Yeah, you're going to learn today.
Tell you what to do. But I do think that we are moving back to full cycle sales. I think SDRs and BDRs are going to roll up under marketing and they're going to be using all those tools, but they're going to be more salaried positions. And then they're going to be feeding intent, real intent, back to full cycle sales. So when you and I sit down, full cycle sales rep, it's not like we're going to be like, who should I call today? Right. It's going to be like, no, John, you need to call Derek. because Derek just did these things online. His business did this. The macroeconomics did that. And by the way, you should call Derek because he actually likes the phone over email. And when you call him, here's three little snippets of intel that you can use in your conversation to get him to pique his interest. And then I'm going to do that, make that phone call, that last mile human factor, right? It's
right,
me.
Right, right.
And then I'm going to record this call using AI. It's going to summarize that shit. It's going to put it right into CRM and I'm going to create a summary email that I can send back to you. That's where we are going, period.
Okay, so question though, but isn't everybody going to be doing that? Don't we reach a point where every salesperson is doing an approach like that when AI is fully adopted? And your competitors, wouldn't they, if they're using the same models, the same AI tools effectively, which, you know, they're not going to be, right? There's a chance that we get to the point where we all sound the same again.
Nah, so no? It goes back to when I train, right? I end all my trainings like this.
10, 60, somebody, 30, what is it?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, yeah. Right? Look, there's people, there's the early adopters, there's the bleeding edge, there's the leading edge and all that other stuff. And then there's the laggards. It's going to be the same no matter what the technology, what it is. So there's always going to be a group of people that are the laggards, and there is no chance that they're going to be able to all sound the same, right? Because to me, it's all about, let's take that back. Even if it is, okay, if I can use AI to understand my prospect and client better and make sure that my solution is aligned so it's as relevant as possible when I am reaching out, well, then who gives a shit if we're all the same? Because now we're just going to get more and more relevant. So the client's going to be more and more selective of, ooh, that is actually a much more relevant conversation than this one. And even if they're both cool, now you're in the sales cycle together. Then you have different skills that you have to leverage, right? So good. You know what I mean? I want everybody to do it because
it's more customer centric though, too. I mean, I think
exactly that's the point, right?
Yeah.
It's like we're all sounding the same right now because we're all using these dipshit cadence tools,
beating ourselves on the chest.
Yeah, and saying how great we are, right? But as soon as you flip that script and like realize nobody gives a shit about you, right? And they only care about them and their situation. Well, if that flip happens with AI and can empower sales reps to gain true insights and then marry up their solution of how they can help, like I'll give you an example. There's and you probably heard me talk about this AI, this 10K analyzer that I came across, right? This shit, no joke. Like I used to ignore 10Ks like you read about because it's just they're boring as hell and they're way too long and make my brain hurt, right? And so now this AI thing, what you do is you tell it, it's a free one. You tell it what you do, right? So you upload your PDFs and your value statements and all this other stuff, right? Then you grab a 10K, if you can find one, right? 10K annual report. You plug it in. It then summarizes the 10K in 5 seconds, key takeaways, main pain points of the client. Then it marries up your solution and the components of your solution that could add the most value to what their specific pain point and challenges are. And it gives you messaging on how to do that. Like what? So now I'm not just reaching out being like, hey, Derek, we're the leading provider of sales training and we're the Fortune 500 companies and who gives a shit? I'm like, hey, Derek, I was skimming through your 10K, man. And one of the things you talked about, one of your strategic initiatives was here. And one of your biggest challenges was here. Well, I wanted to give you a call because, you know, we're working with a lot of other companies in that space. And this component of what we do really helps execute on that. And I got some examples here I'd like to share with you. Would you, you know, give me a call back and I can kind of see how it can maybe help you align that. Like if a sales rep did that from like aligned with my values, aligned with my growth goals and was able to tie that and then gave me specific components and examples of how they could help me address, dude, I'm listening. I'm listening all day long on that.
I love that. I love that. Let's switch gears real quick. I know we only have so much time and I want to do some rapid fire with you. But before I do, you've been traveling a lot this week. This is your first day back in your home office. You've been on the road all week doing SKOs. It's SKO season. Some of the guests that we have planned for the show, you know, they're punting until after SKO season. So I really appreciate you making the time. I know you had to do one this morning, even that was virtual. But I was watching your story on Instagram and you were, and again, for those that are watching, tune into JB. He's actually active on Instagram as a thought leader, as opposed to everyone else who's just on LinkedIn. So I appreciate that. You were at the Freshworks SKO in Las Vegas. You had nearly 500 reps in the room, which is impressive as hell in itself. But you mentioned in your story after you left that it was a kick-ass kickoff. Mm-hmm. What makes for a kick-ass kickoff? You've done this show, this tour year after year after year, you've done, I don't know, hundreds of probably SKOs, but in your mind, what makes for a kick-ass SKO?
I think energy, right? So I think energy and engagement, that's the thing. Like there's a lot of SKOs that I go to that are just drone through, product updates and, and it's just a snooze fest. And I think right now, since COVID hit, in-person SKOs have been hard to come by, right? Because everybody's still like, oh, virtual. This is the first year since COVID that I've felt like everybody just wants to get together. Like just to be together, right? And be out of the screen, Zoom session, those type of things. And so you could feel the energy in the room of just people enjoying being physically there. But it also you need to leverage that, right? Because if you then bring everybody together and have some fun, but then spend the whole day droning through product updates and shit like that, like that's where you lose it. And so the Freshworks wanted to actually take a different approach to that. They wanted to actually use this as more of a workshop than a keynote type of thing, right? And so look, I'll do keynotes all day long, but a keynote's a keynote. It's an hour. Maybe get people fired up, maybe give them a few things to think about, but no, nobody's going to do anything different after listening to a keynote. It's when they get their hands dirty. It's when you can get them working together. It's when you can facilitate conversations and exercises and those type of things. That's where the magic happens. And that's what I worked with fresh with all the keynotes is I tell people, I'm like, if you pay me, I will come and do a keynote. I'm not going to say no to that. Okay. But here's my suggestion on how to do it otherwise, based on what I've seen, right? A little bit of challenger sales stuff, right? Because if you're not if you're not learning and engaging on skills, not just product knowledge, we can do product knowledge anywhere. Like my philosophy is right now is that anything that is a presentation, right? Like that is a one-way presentation without like a Q&A or a workshop associated with it, that should be a video recording sent to the team beforehand so they can digest it when they can watch it on their own and digest it and then come to an event to do something, right?
Idea. Great
And
idea.
that's the approach Freshworks took. They said, we want to bring in an outside vendor, right? Because that's the other part of this is like a lot of teams, it's an echo chamber, right? So they hear the same shit from the same executives all the time. It's just like being a parent, right? Like you could tell your kid and stuff until you're blue in the face, and they'll be like, yeah, whatever. And then all of a sudden the cool aunt comes or their friend's mom says something and they're like, oh my God, that's totally right. It's like and so just having an outside voice to come in and reinforce a lot of the stuff that you're probably already telling them anyways, there's a lot of benefit to that. And so that's why like the energy in the room was killer, like the team was super engaged. It was a lot. I mean, keeping 500 sales reps' attention for more than 5 minutes at a time is not trivial. But I think if you structure it right and you make sure that there's engagement there, like you can have some, you can make a difference.
Any horror stories and from all the circuits you've done of SKOs?
Not on my end. I mean, not for me personally. I've seen some shit. Yeah, I've seen like I've. Probably the worst one was I don't want to call out anybody's name here, but I saw some. There's a certain point where preparation is key, obviously, right? When you're doing a keynote or something like that, but there's either underprepared or overprepared, and I don't know which one happened for this particular scenario, but this individual, I won't even say male or female here, this individual came out on stage, and the energy already was like it just wasn't there, right? And this was their first kind of intro to the company. And he just something was off about the energy. And they started in on their script, if you will. And no joke, like they got all the way up to it. And then when you see somebody's brain just stop, right? Like, and I don't get me wrong, I've been there
Deer in the
before.
headlight.
I've completely lost my train of thought. I've done it multiple times on stage where I'm like main topic, right? And then all of a sudden I start going sidebar with some like cool story that I think is relevant to it. But then I get so
How'd
far
I
down
get
that
here?
story, I'm like, damn, I totally forgot where I was going with this. Could y'all remember, right? And I have fun with it, right? 'Cause I've been there, done that. But this was one of those ones you could tell that they had memorized the script and they had practiced the script, the script, the script, the script. And so when they got to a certain point in the script, they just dead stopped. Like you could tell their brain
They
couldn't
walk
figure
off
out.
stage, they panic, like,
No, no, no.
those.
So it was like they stopped. And you could tell like they forgot their line, like forgot the next word, and they were like, it was super awkward. And then they backed out. They like physically and, literally backed out. And we're like, ah, yeah, sorry. So I was a little, and kind of, and then started on in the same sentence and the same exact words and stopped at the same exact spot the second time. And when I tell you, like when you're watching a movie and it's so
Yeah, it's so
awkward, like you
uncomfortable
can't
for
watch, like, holy
you.
shit. Like I was this close to jump, like, 'cause I was sitting in the front row. And I knew the company and I knew the people, right? So I was like this close to like jumping up on
Saving him.
stage and being like, hey, everybody, what's up? And just like distracting people because it was that fucking awkward. Because then the problem with that is it set the stage for the rest of the day. And it was just like it was almost impossible to recover from that. Like everybody was like, ugh, gross. That was
That's, and I'm
gross.
sure that's all they were talking about. I
Yeah.
think the horror story, I've obviously attended and helped facilitate SKOs a ton of times, but the biggest horror story for me was a rep that we flew in from the UK. Not to say that the UK has a drinking problem or anything, but this rep, first time to the States, it was an SDR, so he was a young guy and didn't show up on day two. Went out day one, went out with the crew and partied, and the convention center was attached to the hotel, and it was like 8:30. We were 30 minutes into the presentations. I'm looking around, I don't see him. I'm the manager at the time. I literally went to his hotel room to see if he was there, and lo and behold, he was passed out in his hotel room. Had him get situated and dragged his butt down into the show. But that for me was because I pushed to get my team to come because they were not every company springs for budget for SDRs when it comes to SKOs in some cases. And so it wasn't a good look to say the
Well, that's why,
least.
like, I'll tell you right now, Salesforce. I used to go to Salesforce SKO in Vegas, and it was a shit show. I mean, it was a straight up bender. Like they rented out the, like, 1 year I was there, they rented out the club Tao for three, the full club.
MGM, I think, right?
Yeah,
Or yeah.
3 nights in a row they rented out Tao.
Wow.
That must have cost $5 million, like literally $5 million just to rent out Tao. And like it was a straight up bender. And I'm doing like presentations in the morning where people are still with their hoodies or wearing the shit that they're
Right.
wearing the night before and sipping up. I'm like, this is pointless. And so I think Benioff eventually was like, this is a disaster waiting to
It's an
happen.
HR nightmare waiting to
HR
happen. Yeah.
nightmare, the
Yeah.
shit that's going on. Like for some reason, a lot of people that I find when they go to these sales kickoffs, they go crazy. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? Because they're
Yeah.
pent up or whatever it is, because they're family and they're every day they have to deal with their wife and their kids or their husband or something like that. And then they get into this environment and they act a fool. And that is job, like, I mean, you are risking your job in every way, shape, and form. Like, don't get me wrong,
Well,
I've
there's
been
a
there for
culture of
days.
people who and again, I go back to my London peeps. Again, I love you guys, but it's the pub approach, where that's just what we do. We drink on a regular basis. We get drunk together. We show, we're being genuine in that way. And so there's a positive spin that you can see people try to put on it. But to your point, if you can't handle your shit, then you might end up making a fool of yourself. I got on stage once to as the recognition lead, right? And so I had to like be the MC for an SKO once. And there was free drinks, and Hennessy was behind the bar. And I don't know how many straight Hennessys I had, but I got up there and put it this way: the CFO had to take me off the stage. It got to that point. But yeah.
Oh, I did a training one time. It wasn't a SKO, but yeah, actually it was a SKO, where I got so hammered the night before, I threw up three times during my present. So
Oh,
I kick
shit.
things off, like, no shit. I kick things off. I'm like, hey, everybody, what's up? I'm like, I can do this. All right, I'm fine, right? 15 minutes in, because I get an early warning sign when I throw up, like my mouth starts to get really, really
I
watery,
get
right?
goosebumps. Yep.
Yeah, and so I felt like the saliva hitting my mouth. I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna puke. And so I'm like, all right. So 15 minutes, I'm like, you know what? Why don't we all take a break? I'm gonna hit the head real quick. I'll be right back. Right, go in the bathroom, throw up. Came back. I'm like, all right. And when I throw up, I turn like pale white, like your whiteboard right there, white, right? So it's like fucking obvious, right? So I'm up there trying to still pretend like I'm cool, and it's not obvious. 15 minutes in again. take another break, right? Go to the bathroom, like do it again. And I mean, I powered through the whole day, but then afterwards, thankfully, I was friends with the guy who hooked it up with it. And he goes, "Hey, John, great stuff. You know, everybody had a good time." He's like, "Can I ask you a favor?" I was like, "What?" He's like, "Next time we do this, could you not go out the night before and get shithouse drunk?" And I was like, "Well, is that obvious?" He goes, "Dude, are you fucking kidding me?" He's like, "Every time you left, everybody knew you were going into the bathroom to puke, and we were all laughing about it." I'm like, "Damn, I'm
Damn.
sorry."
Damn. That's hilarious. All right. Well, I have some fun for you. I know we're running low on time. It's
That's
rapid
all right, bro.
fire. So the first, I'm gonna mix them up. I'm gonna try and keep it fun. I got some feedback from a previous guest. And like I always ask for feedback after these interviews. But I did my rapid fire and he was like, "Make some fun stuff in there." So I
There
got
you go.
some stuff in here. But first I wanna know, and you've talked on this already, so we'll keep it quick. AI in sales, is it a game changer or is it just more tech making more noise?
Oh, it's a game changer. It's a game,
All right.
period. It's a game changer. It will replace average sales reps without question. It will empower good and great sales reps. It will replace average sales reps 100%. And unfortunately, over 50% of our population is average. And that's being
More,
massively generous. I think more like
exactly. I agree.
80%.
That 80-20 rule, right? Next question. Super Bowl prediction, Niners or Chiefs?
I got to go with the Taylor Swift conspiracy theory.
Really?
I think the NFL wants to see Taylor and Travis on the field, right? The fairy tale fucking like it's it, because they are so psyched that Taylor Swift, because now my 13-year-old daughter is gonna watch the Super Bowl, like which she would never give a shit about the Super Bowl. My 13-year-old daughter is going to watch the Super Bowl. So they are going to script this where they're going to have Travis and her on the field with all the confetti coming down and the fairy tale and the whole thing. I unfortunately, and maybe this is just me like watching too much shit on Instagram, like I'm starting to buy into the conspiracy theory shit
You
with NFL.
obviously,
Right. No, but just like the NFL, it's like you see the refs, you see, and you put together the fact that so much betting now happens because of all the DraftKings and those type of things. There is no question in my mind that a lot of this stuff, I mean, I'm hearing, on real podcasts, like not just conspiracy theory ones, about how NFL players get literally a script in the beginning of the year that says what's going to happen for their team. There's been a couple of players that have come out and said, "Oh yeah, beginning of the year, this is, we know which games we're going to win, which," and I'm like, "What?" And I'm hoping that's not the case, because to me, sports is
That will
like
kill
the
the whole
final
thing.
frontier of reality. You know what I
Right.
mean? Like, I
Right.
just hope that, like, because nothing's real anymore, right? And reality TV is a joke. None of it's real,
Scripted.
right? It's
Yep.
all scripted. So like sports is still that, like, like you don't know the outcome. And that's why, for instance, boxing fell off, because as soon as everybody realized that boxing
Same.
was rigged, fuck off
That's why
boxing.
WWE and WWF never really, reached that. If it was real wrestling, raw wrestling, people going at it like that,
Well,
that would.
I think what people accept with those is that they're not real. Like they
Yeah, that's
accept that
true.
WWE is
True.
not real. So they treat it as a soap opera, like for men, right? Whereas like sports, like real sports, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm sure a bunch of WWE people are gonna reach out and go, "It's a fucking real sport." No, it's wicked athletic. And
Right,
yeah, I
right.
guess but I wouldn't call it a sport. I would call it entertainment. But if you're talking sports, like competitive sports, once that starts to creep in, that you don't you doubt that it's that the outcome is legit, it's gonna suck. So I'm hoping that that's not the case, but the NFL is one that's creeping up on me a little bit, as far as this seems a little too scripted. So
All
we'll
right.
see.
Well, I'm rooting for the Niners. I'm here in the Bay Area, so I got to, while I'm a Raider fan, I am going for the Niners.
I'm
So
rooting for the
we'll.
Niners too, because I don't want Mahomes to catch Brady, for fuck's sake. That's what I'm rooting for. Like I thought Tom Brady, I thought I was never gonna have an argument about GOAT. Like, fuck off. Just like Jordan, eat shit. I ain't having a conversation. Jordan is the GOAT. You can talk about second place if you want. I don't care, but nobody's gonna touch Jordan. Kobe, all right, close. Shut up, LeBron. But when it comes to the GOAT in football, like I thought Brady was never gonna be touched with his six Super Bowls and all his wins. I mean, shit. Brady didn't get six Super Bowls until he was like 10, 15 years in the league. Mahomes has been to four Super Bowls in 6 years. It's like in his first 6 years in the league. Damn, he's got another 10 years in him. That shit, he might surpass Brady. And I never thought I'd say that. I never thought I'd even admit that. That's why I don't want, like, I'm not a hater, but I don't want him to, I don't want him to win, quite frankly. I want to keep Brady as the GOAT.
That's fair. No, we all have our motives.
Yep.
All right, so this one might be harder to pick. Wu-Tang or Mobb Deep?
Wu-Tang all day. No,
Wu-Tang all day.
that's
All right.
no, that one's an easy one for me.
Really? Okay.
I grew up with Wu, and yeah, so a
Well, you know
lot of
Mobb Deep's song, I guess I forget the name of the song, but it was like ranked number one hip hop song. I'm slipping. I should have
I
known the
forget. I know
name.
what you're talking about, but yeah,
Yeah.
or the question of Tupac and Biggie, right? Like,
Bro,
that's
took the words out of
another
my
one.
mouth. Yeah.
There you go,
And you're an
Tupac
East
and Biggie.
Coast guy, so I assume you're taking Biggie on that.
Nah, man,
No?
I'm Tupac all day long,
All right.
all
There you
day
go.
long. The greatest lyricist of all time, and his lyrics meant something.
Right. He
Biggie
was
was
talking
just
about
rapping
something.
about bitches and hoes, and like, I mean, it's good. Don't get me wrong. I bought my head to Biggie shit all the time. Hypnotize is one of my favorites, but Tupac was like,
Real.
was real. Like
Yeah.
he, what he talked about, what he rapped about, and I mean, if you look at his history too, if you watch his documentary about how his mom was a Black Panther and like all this
Coming
other
from
stuff,
Oakland and
like,
stuff, yeah.
yeah, like that, he was real, and he's got, I mean, if you listen to his lyrics, right,
Oh yeah, grew up on him
he was,
too.
I think he was the greatest lyricist of all the rappers. Like when it came to putting like lyrics together with beats, I think he was the one of the best.
Hit him up. All
Yep.
right, remote or on-site?
For what?
Work, like for salespeople.
I think the first 2 years of a sales rep's career absolutely has to be on site, 100% in the office. Because when I grew up in sales, I didn't get a lot of good sales training. Okay. But I was in the office and I was around sales. And so I learned through osmosis. You know
Same.
what I mean? Like I would listen to you on the next cube making a call, and I'd be like, damn, I like the way he said that. You know, the VP of sales would come over and talk to somebody next to me about a deal, and I'd be like, that's interesting, right? So I would learn just by being around sales. And I think that first of all, from a camaraderie standpoint, from a motivation standpoint, all that stuff, like I would want to be, because sales is brutal, man. It's such
It
a
is.
brutal profession. And if you go to your house in your studio apartment and making calls and getting your ass kicked all day with nobody to really commiserate with, like that's a miserable fucking experience. Like I guarantee you more reps are going to get in and out of sales than they ever have because of the remote shit, right? Because it's not satisfying. It's not enjoyable.
It's already hard
Part of
enough,
the,
and then you layer in being isolated. It just,
yeah.
yeah.
No, it's so I think you got to earn remote. I do. And now,
Okay.
don't get me wrong, I don't want to go back in an office for fucking anything. Like I have zero interest. I'm a grown ass man. I've done my thing. I've done my time. You know, maybe once or twice a week where we could get together if I had a team and that type of thing. That'd be cool if
Right.
we were local. But no, like for me, I don't. I this is dream come true for me, right? But for younger sales professionals, I think, and I know they're probably, oh, you know, nope. I don't think you can be successful in sales if you don't aren't around sales all the time.
Right.
So.
The beginning of my career, it was outside sales, inside sales, but the team was always home based in one office. So even if you were outside sales reps, you were still in the office in the morning, the afternoon. We were crossing each other back at the office and you were still getting that camaraderie.
Collaboration.
Yeah.
I
And
mean,
then inside sales
just
reps,
like
same
the
thing. Yeah.
SDR AE relationships, right? Like
Exactly.
it's going to be way stronger if I can walk down to the cube of my AE and be like, hey, what happened with that deal? What's going on? How could I have done better? Those type
Always,
of things. Like
always.
it's just gonna, and then those just conversations that happen in the hallway. You know what I mean? Like that
Osmosis,
just,
that's what you're saying.
yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
All
So
right, so last two rapid fire questions. Salesforce or HubSpot? I know you're a big Salesforce trainer back in the day,
I
for
moved
10
to
years, I think it
HubSpot.
was.
I moved to
Huh?
HubSpot. Yeah, so I
Moved
switched
to
to HubSpot. I
HubSpot.
actually switched platforms from Salesforce to HubSpot. I was realizing I was using none of the functionality of Salesforce. And I think Salesforce was great for a period of time, and I still think they're great, obviously. But for me, a small business, you know, now that I'm back on my own, just my own thing, like I'm trying to put everything in one dashboard for me and combine all my marketing, sales, and activities so I can see it all in one dashboard. And HubSpot was just for me a little bit of a simpler solution, and so I like it. But there's a lot of other ones out there too. I don't really care these days what people use as their CRM, just as long as they have one and they don't overcomplicate it. The problem I had with Salesforce is, and I wish they would change their model, which is they like as soon as you sign up for Salesforce, they light up every fucking field in Salesforce. And it's just like, and what do you do? It's like when I bought this house. So, you know, my wife and I first we met and we bought like an 800 square foot apartment, right? air condo, and it was cool. Like we lived in it. We had a nice little right, and then Jefferson's moving on up. We got a house, right, and we got to it was a 3,000 square foot house. And I remember the first time
Wow.
we sat in it, we were like, "What the f-?" Like we lived in one room. We lived in one tiny room in a corner because that was what we were used to. Because that's all the furniture we had too. And I remember the first few nights, we were like, "Damn, like how like we don't need this size of a house. Like
How are we gonna
we
fill it
don't like."
up?
This is ridiculous. We're never going to be 6 months later. We fill that shit up and we're like, oh, we need more room, right? It's the same thing with Salesforce, right? If you light up all those fields, you're going to fill them with shit. You're going to find shit to fill them with.
Good
And so
point.
then you
Yeah.
deal with this rat's nest of stuff that you have to reverse engineer and clean out, right? Whereas if you start with just the basics, like start here and then kind of going back to the rep, earn the right to open up these next levels, earn the right to figure out what you need now and turn those things on as opposed to turning them all on and then saying, okay, how can I use this? So that's the biggest challenge I see with the Salesforce. But they're all the platforms are very similar to that, but I just moved to HubSpot just because.
Good to know. Well, I appreciate that. You know, I use Salesforce myself. I help clients with Salesforce, but half of the clients that I work with that have SDR teams and whatnot are on HubSpot. There's some others that come up here or there, smaller players, but it's definitely between Salesforce and HubSpot. You're seeing a lot more HubSpot, particularly within smaller companies. Last rapid fire question. So we've talked about sales development. I think I know where you're going to go with this, but I'm curious, is sales development a dying model, or is it going to continue to get adopted?
I think it'll continue to get adopted, but I think it's a dying model. So I really do. I think we again, I think we're going to get so good with intent information about people, right? Because let's put it this way. Here's the analogy I use on this one. Okay, why do we hate spam, right? Because it's irrelevant for the most part, right? Whether that comes from a rep through in a cadence or some bullshit marketing email that we get, right? We don't like spam because it's 9 times out of 10 completely irrelevant to who we are and what we need. On the other hand, why, to your point earlier, do I like Instagram? Well, Instagram,
See all the
I've trained that
notifications popping up
algorithm.
too. Low key brag. There you go.
I've trained that up. Well, that algorithm's trained me. Okay. I've stayed on videos longer. I've liked up. I've thumbs up some certain things. I've shared certain stuff. So that shit knows me. So now every ad that I get on Instagram, I'm like, damn,
That's scary.
I want that. Like, I didn't even know that was a thing. Like, holy shit. You know how much stuff I have bought on Instagram because it was like, I hope, yeah, like that looks cool. Right. So if you picture a future, like Instagram knows us because that's how we engage. But with this AI stuff, between your LinkedIn profile and your other social profiles and all that other stuff, you throw some AI out there and you start tracking what individuals and people and companies are doing, we're going to get to a point very quickly where every email in your inbox is going to be hyper relevant, super personalized. And at the end of the day, do I give a shit whether that's coming from a sales rep or a person? Nope.
Well, that's the biggest challenge, right? AEs don't do it. And why we separate the roles is because AEs don't do the prospecting because it's a lot of work and they're focused on down funnel activities. And, for whatever other reasons that are debatable, but we've separated these roles and responsibilities so that this highly refined work that SDRs have to do, research, tailoring the message, if we can truncate that and streamline that, offload it with AI effectively, it kind of makes the argument that maybe we can couple this back up with an AE because it's kind of going in the background in some respects.
Well, look, at the end of the day, outbound right now is brutal,
Yeah.
brutal. I don't care what you sell, who you sell to. Literally, cold outbound is as much as I train it, it's almost a fool's errand. My opinion, you have to look at cold outbound as a marketing function because it's an impression point. The days of us cold calling somebody or sending somebody an email and hitting them with the perfect message at the perfect time for something they've never fucking heard of before, you know what I mean? And have them immediately change their priorities so that they can invest in that thing. Like those days are so far gone, it's painful. So you have to look at it as a nurture. You have to look at it as an impression point, which is why I think all sales reps have to become mini marketers. That's why brand matters. That's why what you do on social matters. That's why that retweet, that share, that comment, because it might be a conscious or a subconscious thing, but you're placing those impressions. And I'll leave you with one of my favorite analogies, which is you ever seen the movie Focus with Will Smith?
No, I've seen a lot of Will
Okay.
Smith movies, but I haven't seen
You
Focus, I
should
don't
check
think.
this one out. It's a good one. So he's a con artist. Long story short, he's a con artist, right? And a really good one. And so he goes and scams people, and he gets groups of people together to help scam a bunch of. So he goes to the Super Bowl, for instance, with his team, and they pickpocket, they run scams on all these people, and they collect $1 million, right? And so he then takes that $1 million, and he's a degenerate gambler. So everybody's like, all right, well, like, please don't gamble this away. We'll see you in a couple of weeks where we can divvy this out, right? So he's like, yeah, no problem. So he goes with his girl, who's part of this. He goes to the Super Bowl, right? And he sits in a suite. And he starts betting on random shit with his girl, right? And he's like, hey, I bet you that guy eats his hot dog, before she eats her popcorn. I bet you five guys turn around and look at that girl's ass while she's walking up there, right? And they're just betting on dumb shit, right? But it's in within ear distance of this Asian guy, right? And this Asian guy kind of leans over one time. He's like, hey, can I get in on that bet? Right? And was like, all right, sure, right? So they start betting. And then it gets into the double or nothing, right? So, hey, double or nothing that this happens, like on this play or whatever. And long story short, double, 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 Will loses all his money. Okay. And it's like, and you're sitting there watching this going, like, Jesus, dude, are you fucking kidding me? Like, this is, what are you doing? And then as Will's pissed and he's walking out the door, right? He turns around, he's like, hey, I got one more bet for you. And the guy's like, man, like, you're crazy. Like, $1 million, double or nothing. What are you fucking crazy? Like, you, like, literally, you're crazy, man. Go home, right? He's like, no. He's like, all right, fine. What's the bet? He goes, I'll let you choose any number you want on the field. Any number you want. I don't care what number it is. And I'll bet you I'll guess what number you choose. And the guy's like, what are you talking about? There's two football teams down there. There's like over 100 numbers on the field. You're gonna guess which one I choose? And he's like, you know what? Will goes, I'll do you one better. I'll let my girl guess what number you choose. And she has no idea what's going on. And she's like, abso-fucking-lutely not. She's like, I know. She's like, I
Oh,
want nothing to do with this, right? And he's like, just sh. And so the guy takes the bet. So he grabs the binoculars, he starts looking around, right? And all of a sudden he sees down on the field this guy with 55 across his chest, right? So he picks the number. And so then he gives the binoculars to the girl. And the girl's like literally panic attack. Like, well, like I don't know what to. He's like, just look. And she looks around, she looks around, she's sweating it, she's sweating it, she's sweating it. And all of a sudden she sees down there on the field this dude, like this guy wearing a 55 jersey. And it was their friend who they'd been hanging out with all week. And so she kind of looks at Will and he goes, and she goes, 55? And the guy's like, no way did you guess that? How the fuck did you guess that? Like blows his mind, right? And the point is that Will knew that this guy was a degenerate gambler from somewhere in Asia, right? A billionaire who loved to bet on the most ridiculous things. And so when that guy landed at the airport, Will had it set up where the car that picked him up, the license plate was 55. There was protesters of outside his hotel room, Union 55. The guy who was going to wear the jersey pulled up next to him at a stoplight and started screaming so he saw his face. The hotel that he roomed, the room that he stayed at was room 55. The chandeliers looked like fives. The song that was on the speaker in the suite was Rolling Stones, whoop, whoop, and apparently in Mandarin, whoop, whoop, was 5-5. So everywhere this guy looked or saw or whatever, he was subconsciously getting hit with 55. And so when it was his time to choose what number did he almost have to choose? It's 55. And so for me, I'm gonna retweet you every once in a while. I'm gonna put a comment on LinkedIn. I'm gonna connect with you. I'm gonna leave a voicemail. I'm gonna send an email. I'm gonna, right? I'm gonna send you, I might even send some shit in the mail so that everywhere you look, you see 55. 55 just happens to be me. So that's what I think as sales reps we have to do, or else we're going to get replaced easy.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Sales Consultant Podcast. If you'd like to support the show, it would go a long way if you were to write a short review on the listening app of your choice.